Lecture 19, Republic to Restoration, 1647 to 1660.
Our last lecture surveyed the progressive antagonism of the political nation by the fiscal and religious policies of Charles I of England, an antagonism which culminated in the First Civil War in England between 1642 and 1646. We also saw in that last lecture how that war ended with the utter defeat of King Charles I by Parliament's New Model Army, an institution headed, among other people, by Oliver Cromwell. The question that we stopped with last time was, why didn't it all end there? I mean, if the king's been defeated by Parliament, why wasn't it game over? And I think the point to stress at this point is that for all of its military success, Parliament was actually politically extremely divided. In other words, the military united front overlay a much more complicated political picture. I think, although it's not always easy to assign particular individuals with confidence, we can, conceptually speaking, divide Parliament roughly into three groups. First of all, there was a set of hardliners who wanted cast-iron limitations on the power of the monarchy before they'd be willing to disband the New Model Army. Second of all, there was another group of conservatives who hadn't really been all that enthusiastic about the war against the monarchy in the first place, and who were willing to accept Charles's return to power with truly minimal conditions, minimal restraints on the power of the monarchy. And in between, there's a very large swing group, a large group of moderates who vacillate between the hardliners and the conservatives. It should also be said that by the mid-1640s, weariness of the war of the war's violence, and certainly of the tax burden of the war, weariness of this sort was really widespread throughout the country. But even more worrisome for a lot of people was the fact that the war had seen the proliferation of radical religious and political organizations, often called the sects. By the year 1646, for example, a group called the Levellers, led by a man named John Lilburn, had built up a truly considerable following in the city of London, and the Levellers' policies were kind of alarming from the point of view of many members of the English political nation. The Levellers took an anti-monarchical position, they rejected the authority of the House of Lords, and they stressed the supreme power of the House of Commons, strictly controlled by an expanded electorate. For the propertied classes, the Leveller program represented something truly terrifying. Indeed, the Member of Parliament Denzil Hollis feared that the ongoing political instability would ultimately lead to a kind of social revolution when, in Hollis's words, servants should ride on horses and the meanest of men, the basest and vilest of the nation, have got the power into their hands, trampled upon the crown, baffled and misused the parliament, violated the laws, destroyed or suppressed the nobility and gentry of the kingdom. What we see here is the classic worry of early modern political elites, that aristocratic resistance to the crown on what are relatively limited grounds will balloon into the political mobilization of the common people and ultimately a kind of social revolution. Now, on the other side, facing Parliament, Charles I was still at this point unwilling to negotiate seriously. His idea, or his strategy at this point, was to try to capitalize on the divisions among his opponents and hope to emerge the ultimate victor from the internal squabbles of those who opposed him. The demands throughout the country for the reduction of taxation, for the demobilization of this enormous and expensive army, ensured that initiative in Parliament at this point was held by the Conservatives. During the winter of 1646 to 1647, and led in particular by this fellow Denzil Hollis, whom I've just quoted, the Conservatives resolved to do three things. First of all, they did resolve to demobilize most of the army. They wanted to keep only a small force for service in Ireland. Second of all, they wanted to create a safe military unit, a kind of a safe army based in London, but carefully purged of all political and religious radicals. The third prong in their program was to try and reach a settlement with the king, some kind of negotiated settlement with the king as quickly as possible. But this conservative program, a kind of counter-revolution, if you will, would ultimately provoke something that these conservative MPs hadn't themselves even reckoned on, and that was the intervention of the army itself in politics. And what is striking about the events that are going to follow is they're quite different from the events that we've seen in the Spanish Netherlands during the late 1580s, 1590s, in other years of the revolt of the Netherlands, in which soldiers who haven't been paid mutiny and kind of go rampaging through an area. What we're now going to see in England is the actual politicization of a military force, a process that's almost without precedent. What happened?